an amazing accomplishment to be able to understand the horsepower of what real estate leverage can do.
Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. Weekly, we share interviews with real estate experts passing on their experience and knowledge to our listeners. Thanks for joining us. My name is J. Darren Gross. We're so glad you're here. Today's guest is an investor from Detroit, Michigan, Mr. Eric Stark. Eric and his partner have flipped over 400 houses and have expanded their operation from single-family flips to multifamily, commercial, and development. And they've even expanded their territory to include Florida. If you like what we're doing, be sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes. It's super easy. Just go to iTunes and type in Commercial Real Estate Pro Network in the search bar. And when you see our logo, it's the headphones, click subscribe. This will ensure that you receive all of our episodes and you can listen anytime you choose, in the car, at the gym, or even at your kid's sports practice. When you do subscribe, be sure to leave a comment to let us know what you think. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. I've been an insurance broker for over 25 years, and my primary clients are real estate professionals dealing in volume single-family flips, multifamily, retail, warehouse, office, and development. Also, I'm a real estate investor and have been for almost 20 years. And based on this, I'm always looking for more information about real estate so I can better serve my clients and also for my own investing. And that's how this came about, Commercial Real Estate Pro Network and CREPN Radio. Remember, and I'm sure you're aware, that insurance is a part of any real estate transaction. And when you or your clients make an offer and you need insurance, give me a call. I'll do everything I can help. That's what I do. The easiest way to reach me is you can go to jdarrengross.com and click connect or contact. Or you can also go to commercialrealestateprotonetwork.com and reach out to me there. All right. Last little note here. If you're on LinkedIn, be sure to check out our group. We've got a group there called Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. It's a great place to network with commercial real estate professionals as well. All right, so now let's get on to the show. Today, our guest is Eric Stark. Eric is a real estate investor and a family man. Together with his partner, Stephen Mills, they've created an impressive number of flips and real estate holdings. But key to it all is the power of leverage. All right, I'm really excited for today's talk. Today we've got Eric Stark, who is a real estate investor. He's a family man. He's from Michigan. He's living in Florida, and there's a lot more to get to with Eric. And Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, man. I appreciate you having me on today, Darren. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm really looking forward to our call today, and thank you for making some time for us.
You bet.
Hey, before we get going down this kind of talk kind of thing, if you could do me a favor and fill in some of your background, tell us or tell the audience a little bit about who you are and kind of fill in the gaps there and that little very brief intro I gave about you.
Sure. No, first and foremost, thank you so much for having me here. I hope we really dig in and pull out some good stuff so people can learn some good things today. My story is probably similar to a lot of other people. I grew up with two loving parents. They were separated, and they kind of taught me the right values in life. My dad put me to hard labor at a young age of 11, so I've always had a sick work ethic in my blood. I appreciate it. I love to work hard and play even harder. Grew up with loving parents that taught me a lot about entrepreneurship, even though they were not entrepreneurs in their own right. I started like flipping bikes when I was a younger kid, even like at 11, 10, 11 years old. I used to pick bikes out of the garbage and, flip them. And then, as I got older, I started riding dirt bikes and four wheelers. I started flipping those. And by the time I had graduated high school, strangely enough, I actually went to apply for my real estate license the day after I graduated from high school. And when I showed up to my first class, the person giving it had actually canceled the classes because no one else signed up. And it really struck me as odd. And I said, man, if that's not a sign to maybe move in a different direction, I don't know what else is. And, you know, I always had a passion for cars because that's, you know, kind of what my dad did, is sold cars when I was younger. And I started managing a detail shop and kind of flipping cars from there. And it, you know, so I've always had flipping kind of in my nature, although I never really realized until I got serious about real estate. It was kind of a hobby before then. But once I started getting into real estate, you know, things changed and evolved very, very quickly. So, you know, again, I grew up like a lot of other people, no special opportunities. Parents never made a lot of money. You know, skated through high school, wasn't the A+, or I wasn't the C+ student, matter of fact, but I've always been a people person. And, you know, I did end up graduating with honors. And, you know, I just kind of had it in my blood that working a true 9-to-5 for somebody else to point me in a direction and give me orders every day wasn't going to be something for me. So 10 years later, a couple hundred deals, here we are.
No, that's impressive. I got to say, you're the first bike flipper I've met. That's a pretty impressive beginnings there to be, you know, grabbing the bikes and making some money off of, you know, the bicycles at an early age. That's awesome.
You know, it's so strange because I'm probably one of very few people that you know that's never read a Robert Kiyosaki, a Rich Dad book in my life. But I hear that there's a story in there that he talks about his when he was a kid, or when I guess he was learning from his rich dad, I guess he was taught to buy two bikes so he could ride one and then rent one to his friends. And it's just so strange when I heard that, because I said, man, I used to have friends come to me all the time, like, man, your bike is so cool. You know, my dad bought me this brand new bike from the store and it's a piece of junk. And I'm like, well, I'll make you one. Give me some parts from yours. And I got some parts from my shed and I'll put one together and sell you a bike. And that's what I did. So I always found that strange about Kiyosaki used to rent bikes to his friends at a young age. That's interesting.
Well, and it also, I think what I'm hearing you say is the ability to see the opportunity, and then also your networking. I'm assuming there was a magnetic pull. People saw the shiny thing that you had created and wanted it. And that network and kind of a buzz, it sounds like you were creating.
Yeah, and all I was trying to accomplish for my end was have a friend that had a better bike that could ride and, you know, jump the hills that we wanted to jump. That's all I was trying to accomplish.
Right. That's
so
great.
Provided a solution and made some money.
Yeah. So let's move on here. So a little bit on the, you mentioned, so the day after high school, you said you went to take the real estate course?
Yeah, I was at a real estate one brokerage, and I had signed up, you know, read a little ad in the newspaper about get your license for real estate. So I went and I think it was like $175 to take the class. And literally the evening that I showed up for class, you know, it was canceled. There was nobody else that had signed up for it. So I'm like, that's a step in the right direction. I need to head somewhere else.
So you started, I mean, you had this idea that you wanted to get into real estate. It was immediately dampened or, you know, you thought, wow, maybe that's not the right way to go. So how long did it take you to find your way back to real estate?
You know, so here's where my life really, you know, really started to degrade, and self-development part of Eric Stark began. When I was in high school, I had a buddy of mine that I really connected with, kind of, you know, it was more than just, a hangout at school or even an after school, but we thought a lot alike. We were entrepreneurs, even though we really didn't know it yet. And we connected on that level all throughout high school. And then we kind of, you know, we hung out with different crowds, but we knew each other through them. But we, you know, we connected because we were entrepreneurial. Like, we just did not know it at that time where it would lead us to. And when I was managing the detail shop and flipping cars, somehow we got reconnected together, and he just, you know, we started to get together more often. And strangely enough, one day he had came over to my house, and I had a Rich Dad book there, even though I never read it. And he picked it up and literally just started, you know, reading about real estate leverage and financing and all these different things. And, you know, we started collaborating on, you know, real estate. And we both decided at that point that it was time for us to get our real estate license. So by me kind of reestablishing that relationship with my now business partner that I run my Michigan operation with, Steve Mills, you know, that's what inspired me to kind of remake the transition from the automotive world back into real estate, was through that inspiration. So from that point on, you know, we took our 40-hour class, got back in the game, and we realized we were really bad realtors at that point and decided that we wanted to look more into the investing side of things. And, you know, from there, we went kind of crazy doing our first deal and several hundred deals after that.
Well, I love the, you know, the migration and kind of the, you know, the journey, if you will. I think that's always the, when people look back, that's what they remember most, is the journey, you know, how you did what you did. And I'm kind of curious a little bit more about, so your friend Steve, or your partner Steve, was there a single aspect of real estate that was an attraction, or was it kind of just the big picture?
You know, a big change came for my life when my son was born. I was a new father, and I was making really good money, mainly through flipping cars and being a partner in the detail shop, but I didn't have any time. I truly didn't. I was working 6 days a week, you know, seven, you know, Sundays were for rejuvenation, and I would have burned myself out. I wouldn't have been able to sustain very long unless I really scaled something. So, you know, as Steve and I began to get together more and more often and just mastermind about, you know, real estate and deals and financing, and you know, Steve really has an amazing entrepreneurial brain. So he processes thoughts and ideas and can scale things very, very quickly in his mind. And, you know, every time we got together, it was just a huge influx of ideas and inspiration to, you know, to just really seek that out and, you know, find out if that path of that people were showing making, you know, big money flipping houses was possible. Because at that point, you know, we had been talking about it. We were searching online and trying to find, you know, we were searching for anything we could to find out how do we do our first deal. You know, going to RIAs was getting very, very minimal results. But it was, from my perspective, and you know, you'll probably interview Steve here shortly after this, but you can even ask Steve. My first and only goal with real estate was to be able to wake up, provide for my family, and drive my son to school every day. That was my goal in real estate, because I was getting up at 5:30 a.m. at the shop at 6 and running it all day till 7, you know, having a wholesale car lot up front and things like that. It was just, it was wearing on me. And as a new father, I'm like, this isn't going to work very long. So for me, it wasn't so much the money, it was the freedom. I won't be able to speak for Steve on that, but again, I know the heart he has, and it's both. But, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the money for real estate, but it truly was the freedom that said, I really need to explore some other options than getting here and killing myself running this operation every day.
Well, and I'm kind of curious too on that, because I recognize that, you know, time, I mean, one of the things that I think appeals to me and, you know, I see it is people that are heavy in real estate are able to take time and go do things that other people can't. You can't call your boss and say, hey, I want to go, I'm going to go on a vacation for 6 weeks. I'll see you when I get back. But I'm kind of curious, you know, going from your auto detail business into the real estate thing, did you see that was a real possibility, or did you see somebody else that was doing this, or how did you recognize that you know, jumping into the real estate was going to give you that opportunity?
Well, again, I had been flipping, you know, things since I was literally a child. It never really clicked in my brain of what I was doing. I was, you know, I would buy a dirt bike, keep it for a season, and it would be, you know, fixed up and modified, and I would sell it for way more money. I never really realized what I was doing at that point. So essentially, all you do when you become an avid flipper is you build a tolerance for risk. And it never really occurred to me largely that, you know, what I was doing when I was younger was preparing myself to be able to sign on a dotted line when you have to sign for a you know, $500,000 mortgage on a property, you know, and hope that this works. So from where we were at making that transition, I was looking at the freedom side of it. I didn't really look at so much of the labor intense or the risk that was required to do it. So that never really, it never bothered me. It never set me back from that kind of perspective. You know what I mean?
Got it. Well, it's, it is interesting that the journey here. So let's talk a little bit about, you and Steve. Were you doing deals separately before you partnered up, or did you guys do a deal together? What was your first deal?
So there was a pretty large span from the time we had got our real estate license in 2006 to when we officially partnered and formed our business, which is in April of 2008. So when we had got licensed, we went and worked at an old school brokerage that had some of the best salesmen, you know, still known on the circuit today. Some of the best salesmen came out of this office, the Floyd Wickmans and, you know, the greatest salespeople in the world, the Joe Girards, came from this area. And we started in that little brokerage, but it was so geared toward the real estate agent side of it. And at the time, my brother was doing real estate and starting a RIA, but I wasn't, you know, really involved with him at that time. But shortly thereafter, Steve and I went and kind of partnered with my brother and worked for him and helped build his company. And we were doing all these deals, but we weren't doing it for us. You know, we were doing the harder labor, the manual things, building the relationships, structuring the deals, and we weren't really getting directly rewarded for it. So we worked with my brother for a while, and then for some reason, Steve and my brother, they never really seen eye to eye to things. My brother is a tough person to get along with in business. And so Steve kind of started to venture off on his own. And Steve called me one day, and he's like, Eric, I got this property that is such a slam dunk. He's like, you need to call that guy that you were working with, and let's do this deal together. And I knew it was going to be a situation where it was going to cause a lot of flair between my brother and I. But the point had been reached when, you know, we had added enough value to them guys where, you know, they could have replaced us in their business. And it was time for Steve and I to venture on to bigger and greater things, you know, together, because we did come in this together, and, you know, we weren't going to be employees throughout this. We need to be owners and, you know, partners of things and things like that. So he calls me with this great deal, and, you know, I'm like, Steve, you need to lock this thing up. I'm like, you know, let's move forward, go hard on the EMD. I'll get my guy over there right away. And, you know, Steve called me back like 30 minutes later. He's like, all right, we got it. He was like, get your guy over there. So I call my buyer, and the guy ends up calling me back like an hour later, and he's out of town. He's like, well, I'm not going to be back for, you know, a week and a half. He's like, I can't move on anything without seeing it. So like, it put me in panic mode. I'm like, here, I got to call Steve back. I met this guy that we were pretty much banking on was going to come through, and he didn't. So what Steve and I ended up doing is raising the money from a relationship that we had in the industry, and we closed on that deal, and we ended up to go on to flip it for three times what we were originally going to wholesale it to my buyer for. And
oh, that's awesome.
It was just, you know, this huge aha moment, and it wasn't because the money. The big aha moment came for Steve and I when we finally learned what leverage was, because we truly just created the largest paycheck either one of us had ever seen on our first deal, wondering, hoping, and praying that this was going to work. And it wasn't the money that astounded us, but we sat back and said, we bought a property, a situation went bad, we went like madmen to raise enough money and show the value that this is a good deal and close on this thing and sign our names on the dotted line and flipped it to somebody else and made a small fortune with none of our own money. That's leverage. And
right.
we knew right from that point that this was nothing that we ever pictured sitting at the, you know, the events that we had attended and the courses that we have read. We're like, this is truly an amazing accomplishment to be able to understand the horsepower of what real estate leverage can do. to do that deal with Steve separated me from my family for the better portion of 2 years, you know, and now, you know, I had a lot of discord with my brother over several years from leaving his firm at that time. You know, but we're a lot stronger as a family now. And Steve and I have a great partnership, a great business. And I have no regrets on that decision. Although, you know, we walked through a lot of adversity to make that deal happen and understand what the horsepower of leverage can do.
Well, I love the all of the elements in play there. You know, making the decision to break from the family business, that's a huge step.
It was tough.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it plays on all sorts of different levels there. But on the, you know, making the decision to do the deal, even when your plan A fell apart, how long did it take you to raise the money in order to? Because I'm assuming there's some timelines when you tied up the property, you had so many days to perform. How long did it take you to raise the money, and what kind of money were we talking about to raise to make the deal happen?
Yeah, we had a 10-day diligence period, and you know, we ran around like mad going to other people. You know, this is our first deal, so we didn't have a track record of, you know, proven profitability that we could throw around to people. But we used to keep a small little office in a little tax office across town, and this guy would always see us bring great deals, you know, to these other guys and lock them up and then flip them to other buyers. And, you know, so he knew that we were very active, and we were kind of the guys that ran my brother's operation. And from time to time, we would stop in there. We'd be handing in a file because he owned a tax office, and he was also the broker of more of like an investment firm. And we would stop in there and drop off files and be doing deals and things like that. And we would bump into him from time to time, and he was a very, very large landlord in the area. And, you know, we just went in there one day and we're like, you know, John, we got this really great deal. You know, I don't even really want to hand this one off to a buyer. We think that there's more value in it. And he was like, well, let me know how much you need, guys. And he was like, I'll make sure that the check's there. And we told him we needed $125,000, and we didn't know how long we were going to need it for. We didn't know if we were going to rehab it. And he was like, oh, you know, no problem. He's like, just let me know when you need the check. And we had told him we need it next, you know, Wednesday or the following weeks. And, you know, so Steve and I are sitting there, and we're like, man, we got to create a mortgage and a promissory note and, you know, some documents. And so we had, like, you know, pulled a form offline and kind of tweaked it to our own verbiage and, you know, put some stuff in there. And, you know, we dropped it off on his desk, and we said, you know, if you want to read through this and you know, make sure everything is okay. And, you know, here's our signatures. And he was like, oh, no, here's $125,000. Like, I'll see you guys in Vegas. And he was just like, he was so like, it was a joke. He meant that as a joke. Like, see, you know, you guys could run with this. And I, you know, I don't know what I'm securing. I've never seen the property. I don't even know if this mortgage is legit. And it was kind of a joke to him. But he was so, I don't want to say free with the money. He was free because we had the speed of trust. He was lending. He was lending on us, not that deal. He knew that we were performers in the market, and, you know, again, just to have a guy give you a check and not, you know, literally, he's never stepped foot, has no idea where it is. We just told him we need a check for $125,000 to buy a property, and dropped off a couple of typed up documents on his desk, and he didn't even thumb through anything. You know, so again, it further allowed us to understand the horsepower of leverage. You know, we're seeing these things take shape and take form, and, you know, we got these mindsets that, oh my gosh, we're going to flip real estate. This is going to be tough. This is for the pros. And we, you know, from Steve's dynamic ability to really foresee things, and, you know, my ability to not have much of a huge tolerance for risk, I should say, we were more awed by the leverage we were witnessing than the money that we had made, you know. So that was the big breakthrough for us. It wasn't about the money. It was about the lesson that we had just learned.
Yeah. And I think the, you know, on your first deal too, recognizing how, you know, somebody that had money but they had seen you performing. It was not like you just randomly found this guy. He knew you and had the trust in you because he'd seen you perform. But his willingness to lend you the money? And I'm assuming it was a loan, or was he, did he lend you the money, or was it it was a mortgage, right?
Yeah, he had lent money on a property that he had never seen, and we gave him a mortgage and a promissory note, you know, so he had security and collateral. But again, he didn't, you know, we didn't sit down with an attorney and draft these documents. You know, he literally, we dropped the mortgage on his desk, and this guy's sitting down going over his tax rolls and literally hands us a check, barely even makes eye contact with us and says, see you in Vegas. You know, yeah. he trusted us. So, I can tell you a great story about private money that stemmed from a bandit sign. Actually, I don't know if we have time for that, or I don't know if you want to segue off for a minute, but I mean, we have plenty of stories about private money and capital. That was just our first deal.
I would love to, and I don't know if you want to share quick, let's do it, because if it goes too long, then we might, I might circle back and say, let's go again, because I think private money is one of those real hidden treasures in real estate investing.
Absolutely.
And because I think that, absolutely, you know, most often, you know, people are familiar with the sign in the front yard and the mortgage broker or you know, even if you're going to any kind of other larger institution, but there's the institution lending, and then there's the private party. And the private party, I mean, the rules are basically whatever you want to make them and what two parties are willing to agree to. So yeah, let's hear it.
So one day I had received a call from one of our bandit signs on a gentleman that wanted to meet at a wholesale deal that we had. It was just a simple little 3-1 brick home in a, you know, nice rental area part of town. So I show up to meet this guy, and I get out of my car and I walk up and meet him. And the first thing he says to me, he says, you're awfully young to be buying and selling real estate. He's like, are you a real estate agent? And I said, well, I am. But I said, I'm the owner of this property. And we just kind of walked through the house together, and he asked me some questions and wanted to know what other properties that I had. And, you know, I told him we had multiple rehabs going on, and I got two more properties coming up down the street. I got another one. I can take him across the, you know, the city line if he wants to look over there. You know, what are you ideally looking for? And he was looking to use some of the money he had to buy a home for his son and sell it to him on a land contract. So, you know, we got to talking, and we went and looked at several houses that day. And at the end of the conversation of us driving around, I said, did you see anything that you were interested in? And he says, well, I actually like all the homes that you have, but that's not, you know, I'm not ideally looking for that for my son. And I said, so, you know, what's your son's situation? What's he looking for? And he was like, you know, my son's more or less content. He kind of lives over in the neighborhood here. He's like, I'm just trying to find a place to park some money and, you know, and get a decent return. And he's like, I come from a real estate background. I said, oh, really? I said, what'd you do? Were you a broker? And he says, well, I used to work at Lee Real Estate. And I said, really, with Harvey and Michelle and Don, the broker? And he says, well, yeah, how do you know? I says, well, that's where I got my start. That was the little brokerage that Steve and I had started at. And he used to be a salesman back there in the early 80s. So now we are able to connect dots together and, you know, let him know that we had, you know, friends in common. So now, you know, not only are we the owners and controllers of some real estate, but we just connected some dots with some people that he knows in the industry that he can go verify if we are who we say we are. So you know, I ended up following up with him a few days later, and we looked at a couple other opportunities, and literally within 45 days, we had turned him into a lender. And, you know, I think we went on to borrow, you know, $500,000 from them, anywhere from 8% to 12%. You know, we did some long-term rental stuff with them. We did some, a lot of short-term flips, and we really just built a great relationship and a lot of confidence in his, you know, cause we kind of supercharged his retirement. I mean, he had access to a lot of capital, and, back in 2008, 9, and 10, when we were flipping, you know, 80, 90 homes a year, we had a lot of money deployed out there at multiple different times. And again, when you're buying $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 houses, we can go a long way. We're not in California needing, you know, $1.2 million for a buy and then another $400,000 for a renovation. So we built a really, really great relationship through that. And another story that actually stemmed from a bandit sign is I had a guy text me one evening to buy one of our wholesale deals, and it was one of the speediest, most awkward, but inconvenient transactions that I've ever done. This guy texted me at like 11 o'clock one night and said, I own the rental next to the one that you have on Rowland Street. And I said, okay. I said, are you interested in purchasing? And he came back and he says, I'll bring you, you know, such and such amount of cash tomorrow. And I countered back at one at another number a little bit higher. He said, done. I'll come to your office tomorrow. And he brought me a check the next day, an earnest money deposit the next day for the full amount of the purchase price, was in and out of my office within 3 minutes, signed the deal, was like the fastest, most awkward buyer ever. But as I built a relationship with this guy more, this guy owned a very, very, very large company on the other side of town and just kind of bought real estate in his spare time. And still to this day, he is one of our largest primary lenders and lends a lot on our development properties. So he's a gentleman that we use when we buy a property, knock the structure down, and then build another, you know, home or multifamily development on it. He went on to become one of our largest lenders because, again, he's seen the activity, the track record. He knew we were buying great deals, and that's all he's looking for. The only reason he wants to buy real estate is to get a better return on his money than the bank is paying. So as long as you can paint that, as long as you can paint that picture to people, you know, when I'm buying a home from somebody on owner finance, I tell them that I pay up to 400 times more interest than Bank of America pays today. And I know as long as it's less than 0.75%, I'm holding true.
Right.
Because take 0.075 and times it by 400%. You know, you're in a 5% tax bracket. You're in a 5% tax bracket. You paint a picture for people that way, not trying to bring people from wanting to be a 12% lender down to a 5%, but taking the market that's got a ton of cash. What do you think the bank's doing with your money? They're arbitraging you. They're giving you 0.75%. They're lending out to other, you know, people that they're getting a mortgage and promissory note on at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8%. Why aren't you doing that? You paint that picture for people and make them believe in you, and you'll have all the private money you need.
Now, that's so true. And the fact that you guys were able to turn in these kind of odd opportunities into lending, you know, lender or source of funds, lenders, that's awesome. I mean, and it goes more to kind of that every opportunity is not just a one direction opportunity. I think that's one of the things that I'm hearing you, your ability to explore what are all the opportunities in play here, as opposed to being just
money,
so focused.
I borrow money from people that we buy their houses. So if I just gave you $250,000 for your property, what are you doing with it? Oh, I'm going to buy a car, go on a vacation, pay a little bills. Okay, well, you still got $200,000 left. What are you going to do with it? Put it in the bank at 0.75 or 0.5 or 0.4% today, or 0.04% today, I should say. Well, perfect. I'll give you 5 to 8%. You will? How? On a property just like the one I bought. How do you think I bought your property? Do you think I came up with the $250,000? No. I borrowed it from somebody else that has a ton of capital sitting around that wants to get better than what these banks pay. That's the picture you got to, you know. I guess the big transition for private money came when, you know, and this is something that Steve always, you know, brought this up to me. He's like, don't ever ask for private money. Offer it. Offer the opportunity. You don't ask people for their money because now you're coming from a desperate borrower style situation. When you come from a source of authority and doing them a favor, you're giving them security, collateral, a track record, your character. You know, people go to great lengths to do lending, but, you know, I'll tell you honestly, Darren, a lot of the money that we do is done on a handshake. I mean, here's the documents, but you know how many of the mortgages that we have on deals that aren't recorded? Because, again, they're lending on us. They're not lending on the property. They know anything that we're willing to put our name on, we're not going to do it to take a loss. And even if we do, they're protected.
Right.
So we're never going to sign up for anything that's going to, you know, hurt them or cut them out. So, you know, I've always had presentations and booklets and pamphlets, and this is how we do this, and this is how you're secure. But Steve and I's strength has always been, put me in front of people, let me have an honest conversation, and I'll show you the value of getting you from where you are to where you want to be.
Right. Now that eye-to-eye and the handshake, I mean, there's a lot of value in that. And clearly you've been able to make it work you know, for, I mean, how much do you think you have available to you right now based on all the relationships you have as far as capital?
Yeah, they're $10 million for good acquisitions. You know, there's no shortage of, money for, now we don't do so much heavy volume. So our deals are a lot larger. They're a lot slower. They're a little bit more complex. You talk about the words leverage. I mean, that's what we've really went to exploit in our business, is how to maximize our leverage. And I don't mean that against our properties, but I mean maximize the horsepower of what leverage can do in a real estate deal. And again, like you said, sitting down with somebody face to face, creating a custom, you know, a custom dinner plate for their, you know, their retirement. That's a skill set that we'll continue to exploit and make sure that we're providing value and showing people how they benefit. That's what it comes down to. We're buying great real estate from great owners that want great security and collateral and to continue their lifestyle on, you know, that's the whole owner finance side of our business. You know, lastly, just to touch base on private money, not to, you know, to segue, but I want to keep it within the realm of what we've been talking about, is if you're not utilizing your title company for private money, you're missing a big opportunity to borrow money, because there's nobody else in town that has their eyes on more real estate transactions that, you know, again, there's a very fine line, because, you know, inner working relationships can let a lender know who's lending on deals all across town. Just say, hey, I want to let you know, there's these guys, they are buying a ton of real estate throughout town. And, you know, you may want to speak to them, because if you're looking to lend money on great deals, I think these kids have a pretty good idea on what they're doing. You know, right. So again, it takes some inner working relationships, and we've been dedicated to our title company since I bought my first personal in Michigan for my personal residence, which was like literally the first real estate deal that I did. And I should have never did that one, but we still use that title company to this day. And there are a lot of beneficial relationships that come out of it.
Right. And even on that, I know even my personal experience, they've got some tools available that can definitely help you, whether it be, I know on payment collection, there was a title company I was dealing with that had a payment collection thing where, you know, the payment could be made and then they pay the lender, and it's all tracked, so everybody can, you know, do their taxes accordingly, you know,
yeah,
recorded documents, you know. So
they handle the same thing for our escrows. I mean, all of our escrows are done through there, you know, for, you know, payments or money withheld or whatever reason. Our title company is full service when it comes to that.
Got it. Yeah, let's move on here a little bit, but I really appreciate you sharing with us the stories there about the money, because I think, you know, leverage, I mean, from the first kind of the aha moment you've talked about, leverage has been the key to the really the aha and probably the key to your success, if I'm hearing right, is understanding the power of leverage and what it can afford you.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what real estate is all about. I mean, freedom of lifestyle and leverage of wealth.
Right.
There's horsepower in those words. Those words excite me. They really do. Leverage and freedom, real estate, you know, study those words and what they mean. I mean, if that's not enough to excite you, then, you know, keep listening and digging deeper. It'll strike within you someday.
Right. So let's move on here a little bit. So tell me on, how are you guys currently, how are you set up as far as inventory? Do you have single families that you're holding for rent? Do you have any multifamily, any commercial? Are you doing flips? Are you doing builds?
All of the above. Everything that you just mentioned, we have all of it. We have single family rentals. We have multifamily rentals. We have commercial. We have not quite vacant land, but we still have one structure on the property that is going to be a very large retail development as the economy continues to grow in that one. You know, we buy properties now very strategically and, you know, forecasting what's going to be coming down the future, and have really, we've really changed our goggles when it comes to the way we acquire real estate. And I don't mean that we've forgotten how to do a quick cash wholesale deal. I still love a good wholesale deal. It's one of my favorite things to do. And that's what allows us to really dig deep into, you know, our owner financing and long-term structures and developments and things like that. So, again, we do have, you know, single-family, multifamily, commercial, vacant land. We'll renovate. We got a couple of renovation flips going on right now. We have three new construction build homes on the market, sold a few of them recently. So we, you know, we have a lot of things going on up in our Michigan market, but it's controllable. You know, it's not where we can't manage it. We keep a very, very close eye on every aspect of our larger, more complex deals, because if they get a little bit out of hand in the wrong area, you can start to lose, you know, some accumulation there.
Right. Do you guys manage all of your own properties, or do you sub that out?
We do. We manage them all ourselves. We have property management right in our office.
And then what about on the development? Are you playing general contractor too, or do you hire that out? Or?
So we partnered with a builder on all of our new construction developments that we have, and that was you know, that's really where Steve, my business partner, shines at, because, you know, again, he has such an amazing ability to foresee things that are not even there now. I mean, even if there's a truly blank canvas, a piece of land, Steve can tell you how to maximize that property and get the most highest use out of that parcel. So Steve, you know, searched high and low to bring a builder on and partner with. And we know several in town. We've wholesaled a lot of parcels to builders, and we see what they build. But we ended on bringing on a gentleman who's actually our age. He's in his 30s. He's a third generation builder, and, you know, his family has built thousands of homes throughout Michigan, estate properties, everything you can think of when it comes to custom homes, spec homes, master plan communities, everything. They've been involved with that for generations. So we did partner with a builder that handles all of our renovations and all of our new construction properties. So, you know, Steve just has to, you know, make sure that everything's aligned with it. He doesn't have to be on site all the time and coordinate, you know, loads and lumber and, you know, things like that. So he's not required to be on site all the time for those.
Well, it sounds like the trust that you've earned with some of the lenders and the stories you were telling earlier is kind of equally going the other direction. Now you found somebody you can trust to partner with and know that things are going to be taken care of. And I think that's really it's a huge part of business, period. But especially when you're talking about timelines and you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and the need to get a return, because there's plenty of stories about trust that was abused or you know, somebody was in it just for the fast buck that didn't care at all about you or whoever they were taking their money from. So
that's exactly like you just said. I mean, that is what this business and any business is, because again, let's talk about what trust allows us to do. It brings it full circle. It's leverage. When I know that we don't have to spend excess capital and excess, you know, brain damage on, you know, a problem at a property because somebody that you've put in place to do it does it well, you're leveraging the power of what you're able to create from a blank canvas. You know, literally, we're this is not a cookie cutter, one size fits all. You know, buy my $97 manual. This is how you flip real estate. This is, you know, this is real. This is the real game. This is, like Steve says all the time, this is chess, not checkers.
Right.
And it's true, because we are talking about several hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars in real estate acquisitions that my lender is banking on me performing, and I'm banking on my contractor to perform and everything to work out right and as planned and as communicated and as discussed. And if we can't leverage those abilities, we have a real problem.
Right. No, I think, it's integral in moving forward with any kind of speed is you have to have that established. Otherwise, you're constantly going back and reinventing the wheel. And, you know, all that energy is essentially wasted, and you've not built up any trust. And you're constantly just trying to figure it out.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you, just as a kind of a reference point here, I know a lot of the listeners range in where they're coming from or where they're going to or how they interact in real estate. But I was just kind of curious, could you put a measuring stick for kind of the assets you guys have under management that you've chosen to keep as opposed to the flips?
So the assets that we keep are, we largely define our keep inventory as what we call our top 100. We have properties across town that are, they are what everybody wants to own when it comes to owning real estate. And we set out very, very passionately to acquire those units and build the relationships with the owners and property managers and anybody that's involved with that building. So when that baton gets passed, it can get passed on to us. And, we've really taken that to the next level by not just, sending a postcard that people are numb to, especially on an A-class structure. It never even makes it into their hands. So to find a craftier way to own the most beautiful properties in your neighborhood takes a little bit more of a skill than just, pulling a swipe file out and man, this piece this month. But we also sprinkle that with what we call superchargers. The most beautiful properties in town, you're going to pay top dollar for. You may get them at a little bit of a discount. And one of the ways you can obviously, increase everybody knows ways to do that through your financing, through adding more value. But we highly focus on A-plus locations where everybody wants to go have dinner with their spouse and, take their family on the weekends and play around those areas. And then we sprinkle them with a property that may not be in the most desirable area, but just throws off an incredible amount of cash flow. Because when you have a bunch of beautiful properties, they typically tend to self-manage themselves. And when you have a bunch of bad properties, you're going to spend a lot of time managing the relationships, not even so much the property. You spend a lot of time managing the relationships that occupy that property and then doing maintenance to the property. But we don't have many of those. We only buy a handful of those a year, and they really have to throw off an insane amount of cash flow. For instance, we have a property that we bought in a not so desirable part of town. It's a 6,000 square foot commercial building. We paid $12,500 for it from an attorney that we do a lot of business with. And that property brings in $5,900 a month.
Wow.
So when you can have a property like that next to a $1 million structure that doesn't throw off a lot of capital, now you're able to power pay the beautiful structures down without having to expend a lot of your energy managing this cash cow. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. I like the mix of it to where you've got, in commercial terms, it would be kind of a low cap and a high cap kind of property where you can get kind of the blended or the ability to actually go out and buy those, trophy properties, if you will, or you need that cash flow because those larger, more desirable properties, that's not the way they work. They're more of kind of a park your cash and let them appreciate kind of play there.
That's right.
So, no, I love that. Looking down here, I want to keep moving here. I love the fact you've got tons and tons of stories here to kind of exemplify what's going on here. What do you think the most difficult thing in your investing is? I mean, clearly it sounds like you found all the funding you need. Is it finding the property? Is it managing the tenants? Is it finding the right people to integrate in your operation? What do you find is one of the
Right now, I think everybody's struggling to find good inventory. Most people still live in la-la land that they're going to buy properties for 50, 60 cents on the dollar, at least in areas that we focus on. I mean, I know you can still do it in war zones. And again, we don't focus on going after those types of deals, but we still come across, quick cash little wholesale deals that still have some decent margins. But, we don't focus on it for rehabs. We're likely not going to keep it as a rental. So I think anybody that's looking in healthy parts of town where buyers are abundant and paying top dollar for properties are going to have a very hard time finding a property with margin that makes sense. And, you know, believe it or not, part of the reason we started building homes is the margin started getting slimmer on the rehabs that we were looking at in the most desirable parts of town. So, you know, we actually got into building homes first off by kind of getting squeezed out of the rehabber market. We started wholesaling properties to builders. And when you're taking a property that you have to pay $100,000 for, that's never going to be worth more than $165,000 when it's fixed up and it needs $75,000 in repairs, and you can sell it to a builder and make a $50,000 profit because he's going to put a $400,000 structure on it and can pay more for the dirt than the home is worth, that's arbitrage at its finest. So, you know, that's why we've had to kind of take that approach into that business model. So I would definitely say that we have a, you know, I don't want to say we have a hard time finding properties, but we analyze a lot more deals than we used to take to the closing table. I think as long as you know where to look for things, you can be very resourceful. You know, that is something that Steve always talks about is, you know, not using your resources, but being resourceful. You know, if you need contractors, where would you go? You know, go hang around Home Depot for a day. I mean that. It sounds silly, and, you know, contractors are the, you know, the unique walk of life in many cases, but go hang out at the marketplace if you want to find out where tenants are. You know, go to, you know, be known around apartment complexes. Find a way to get onto their Facebook pages and their blogs and, you know, be very creative. Go to the marketplace when you are looking for something specific. I always think that it's going to be difficult to find people to manage, but you have to find people that are just driven to, number one, be loyal to you, but to take the idea you're going to give them and let them run with it their own unique way. But I think, if I had to answer that question, what's the most difficult right now, it's finding a good deal.
Right. Well, and that kind of, your answer kind of provides a nice little segue into another thought of mine that I've kind of run with. And I think that it's true that in any marketplace, the opportunity is, it comes from the disruption of the marketplace. In 08, when the market crashed, sounds like right around when you guys were getting started. So
those are the good times.
Exactly.
Those are the good old days.
Yeah. And then so, but more recently, you're talking about how the rehab market was kind of getting squeezed, but you saw the opportunity in the builder that wants to scrape the property and put the $400,000 property up, and you're making money without having to, you know, you're wholesaling. And so again, kind of, if you will, kind of a disruption in the marketplace in that the flip or the rehab market is not as lucrative as it once was. I'm kind of curious, can you speak a little bit to that? Do you see the marketplace like that? Or do you see kind of the next wave of, or the next potential disruption? Or do you have your eyes open for that potential?
You know, I don't think more than a week goes by that I don't have a conversation with Steve. And he says, you know, Eric, when we first started in this business, we didn't know very much. And we brought a spoon to the marketplace to buy properties. He said, next time we come out, he says, we'll bring in a 55-gallon drum barrel. So what he means by that is no market is ever going to stay going up or down forever. It never happens. And we have a mentor of ours who's worth about a half billion dollars and owns, I think one of the top five tax firms in the whole world. And every time we've ever spoken to him about real estate and what he has going on, he always talks about the cycle of a W, and that markets typically operate in the trend of a W. So take out a pen and piece of paper and draw out a W and notice where those market shifts begin to occur. You know, right now we have everything lining up to be the perfect storm again, where people have just been sinking cash, cash, cash into this inventory market. You know, we've had a lot of conversations that last time we had the mortgage meltdown, when this time it's probably going to be a cash meltdown, because people are going to want to start shifting some assets soon if they can't do something in this marketplace. And no market stays the same forever. Obviously, nobody knows when that shift is going to start changing. I've started to notice a certain plateau. I don't mean a directional shift or an increase or a decrease, but I've started to notice a plateau in certain markets that we play in that have went a little stagnant with their inventory. The buyers are a little bit more picky. The financing is still available, but the aggressive buyers that are looking to capture those kind of properties are holding off for that very, very unique acquisition that they can find rather than just jumping out into the market and buying it. So when I see things like that, now I start putting a little bit closer watch on what's going on in that particular sector. But, you know, again, I wish I knew that at the end of elections this year, the market was just going to tank, because we're ready to buy up a lot of property again. So it's never going to stay how it is right now for long. And even when the market tanks, it's not going to stay down forever. It never happens. So just keep following the cycle and trend of a W. You know, draw out your timeline. Grab a W right now and say, okay, between, you know, on this side of the hump, we had, in the dead center of the W, we had the 2006, and at the end of it, 2008, when it really started to drop and decline, and now we're coming back up, we're getting to create another W, another cycle, another, you know, shifting economy. It's not going to stay like this forever, but do I know when? No, I do not.
No, but I like your the simplicity of the W, because you know you don't have to be that old or have been playing in the real estate market that long to have witnessed a couple of ups and downs. You know, when you look back, I mean, 08 clearly was a significant one, but I don't think you had to be a Mensa member to kind of, you know, wonder how long could this go on in 07. You know, when all of the, or even 06, I mean, how all of the, you know, values have been increasing forever, and how much leverage was in play, and how many people were buying homes that couldn't afford to make the payment, and you know, all that. But it's curious there. I'm kind of curious as we go forward, like you said, how many people have parked cash in real estate looking for a return, and if all of a sudden they want their cash, you know, what opportunities might exist in that, you know, when the disruption comes. That's
well, you got to remember, because, you know, there's still a ton of people that are sinking their fortunes, their life savings, their cash buyouts, their cold, hard cash. We're not talking finance institutional money no more. We're talking cold, hard cash is being plunged into the marketplace right now. When the market does start to shift, look at how many people are going to have to hang on when their property doesn't rent. Now they're burning through their own cash. Like, I can't even access my own $500,000, and my asset is plummeting in value. I want this gone now. Well, here's what it's worth. Guess what? Right. There's no mortgage you have to short now. You're taking the loss out of your pocket. So depending on how much of a situation you're in, think of what's going to happen when that cash market tanks. Last time it was mortgages. This time, there's no long-awaited short sales to negotiate or fix themselves. It's cash taking losses.
Well, that's interesting. I like the – I mean, it makes sense, because like you said, how many deals are cash deals now? You know, and then you look at, well, just a W. I mean, I'll leave it at that. I like the W, and stay tuned for more, I guess, is what you say.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you real quick, because we didn't really talk much about it, but I think it's important to touch on your story anyway, and the fact that you're from Michigan, your partner Steve is in Michigan, but you're in Florida, correct?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Tell us a little bit about how that works and what you guys are doing. Because if I understand right, you are investing in Florida as well, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So we moved down to Florida so that we could, you know, duplicate our business up in Michigan and start the same thing down here. But the majority of our focus still is in Michigan because that's where a lot of the opportunity is right now. There's not a ton of opportunity down here. It's a great place for us to park money, but it's not as liquid as it is up in Michigan to be able to get the returns that we can get out there. You know, again, we're plugged into that market up there. We've been, you know, kind of networked into it for a decade now. But the time has come when we want to start putting our sights on something way bigger than Southeast Michigan, and that's Southeast Florida. So, you know, we are a 50-50 partner in everything that we do. And I still fly up there several times a year, usually about every month, you know, to meet with people, to, you know, to keep relationships going with our lenders, to, you know, meet with my team, go over the projects that we have going on, and still partake in it. And again, if I have to leave, you know, to go there tonight for whatever reason, that's what we do. You know, so that's just, it's not a problem. We understand the sacrifice. We all live a great life because of, you know, the lives that we live and the businesses that we operate. But again, we're partners in everything that we do.
I like it. So let me ask you this, because I think this is one of the things that I've kind of picked up on in talking with you, is that obviously being from Michigan, you guys knew the streets, the territory, the, you know, the lay of the land, if you will. Now that you're in Florida, and also just back up just real quick, so having that knowledge, I'm assuming that it was fairly easy to have a sense of the opportunity that existed with a deal that you were looking at in Michigan. And I'm kind of curious, as now you're down in Florida, are you essentially trying to learn the territory, or do you feel like you knowing what you have in Michigan, it's easy to translate down there, or is there an education in just basically the territory?
No, I learned the territories that we want to own property in the first month that we were here. I'm not kidding. When we moved down here, I left, you know, I had my wife do all of our unpacking and things like that. I was in my car every day. I went to every single city. I got all of my zoning maps. I started color coding my territories. I went to the GIS department. I pulled all of our mailing lists that we needed. I started to, you know, recategorize the people that own property, separate the trust from the independent owned, separate the LLCs from the S corp, separate the corps from the private owned, and just start knowing the territory. So I'm the cross between a field guy. I love being in the streets all the time because that's when you really learn what's going on in the market. And I'm also a data junkie. I love to sift through data and go through public records and connect dots and find unique situations and one-off opportunities, because that's when you're able to put together the most, you know, it's personal. It's very intimate and close with the people that own these properties that may be looking for you, just don't know how to. And so again, I spent a lot of time in the streets, but I always have my file folder with me that has extensive research on, you know, these property owners, who they are, you know, what their lifestyle is. We really dig down into our communities. So we, you know, we never take the shotgun approach when we enter a market. We're snipers. We go very focused. We zero in, and we know everything about the areas that we want to invest in.
I like it. Yeah, I'm looking down just kind of the list of the questions I had, and the first thing I want to say is I hope that we can do this again, because there's just so much to talk about, and you've clearly got a lot of experience and what you're doing, and I'm sure the audience would love to hear more about it as well. But I'm just curious, future-wise, what are you – do you guys – I mean, you've kind of laid it out. You're in Michigan and in Florida. You've talked about you went to the market the first time with a spoon. Now you're wanting to show up with a 55-gallon drum, or are you? Yeah, bucket. Or are you? Are you?
Bucket.
Yeah. Are you? Do you have any kind of you know, definite sense of what your future is, or is it just kind of you're in the W waiting for it to see what the next opportunity is, or can you speak to that?
No, we actively pursue acquisitions every day. You know, we still have, you know, I still spend a good amount of time prospecting and reviewing deals. And, you know, I love to network, to bring other, you know, other people that are bringing very large deals. And again, our focus in our business right now is not to focus on little single family flips. You know, it's not that we won't do them. Those, in a way, they kind of just come into our realm through our activity. We're looking for large acquisitions, portfolios that we can purchase. You know, we have a strategy that we're working pretty deeply right now, and we're seeking out landlords that want to sell their portfolios or their apartments or their commercial buildings that only want to continue to receive an income and don't want cash for their property. Because for every single one-off person that just inherited a property or is going through a divorce situation or whatever the case may be that wants cash, there is a whole other marketplace that people don't really understand how it operates that says, I wouldn't mind capturing the equity of my commercial building for what it's worth today, but man, I sure do love that $25,000 that comes in every month.
Right.
So I want to find a guy like that because I can say, well, what if there's a way that I can find a way for you to make maybe $10,000 a month off that, which is pretty much just, you know, a little bit of principal and a lot of interest. You're preserving the majority of your principal payout for years down the road. And, you know, now you don't have to do anything regarding the property. So you may be taking a pay hit, but you're not having to pay the tax penalty. You're not having to do anything regarding the property, and you're living off of your interest now. Your principal is still there. Give the principal to your kids or your spouse or whoever it is. God forbid something ever happens to you. But you're living off of your interest income from this property that's got you to your 50s, 60s, and 70s. You know, project on the future. How long do you need 10 grand a month if you already live a free and clear lifestyle? You're probably okay.
You know, right.
So we're pretty proactive in, you know, again, we don't spend our time advertising fast cash for houses. You know, we'll buy your house in 3 days. It's not something that we focus on anymore. So we're looking for very large development opportunities, storage units, mobile home communities, vacant land that can be used for farming in specific areas that we could rent out. But again, like I said, through our activity, will I take, you know, a couple minutes and do a little $10,000 wholesale deal? Absolutely. Because I can write that thing up in no time and hand it off to somebody on my team, and we walk that thing to closing.
And right.
I still love fast. I still, you know, even though we may have, you know, hundreds of thousands and, you know, things like that going on in real estate, I still love to dip in and out and just do a quick little deal, you know, and we call it lunch money. You stop, make $5,000-$10,000. You're like, okay, well, I got lunch money for a little bit. I can get Caden some money for school.
Right. So, and then if they're fast and easy like that, why wouldn't you? I mean, that's
right. Right.
Great sense. So, hey, I want to, and I'm just kind of looking down here, and I think unless there's something that you wanted to talk about, I'd like to suggest we try and do this again. But I wanted to ask before I let you go, what advice would you give to somebody that's trying to grow their portfolio or really, you know, go from one level to the next level? What, can you speak to that?
Let's hope the listeners leave some comments on what they want to hear us talk about. We can just do a show exclusively, you know, if they want to hear about owner finance or how we've structured some deals or, you know, let's see if they leave some comments and we'll go from there.
Definitely.
You know, when we were flipping a lot of those homes in 2008, 9, and 10, I mean, we did a lot of homes back in those days, and we were just, it was so kind of emotionless. You're turning paperwork at that point. You know, for every wholesale deal that we do, we're turning paperwork. For every rehab we do, here's another address. Same stuff, different address. Same stuff, different address. It's either one of two categories. If I was to talk to somebody about building the portfolio you want, be very selective, be very personal, and get very intimate with those properties. Because if you've ever heard the quote that what you focus on expands, I've watched our whiteboards come to life. In both Steve and I's offices in Florida and Michigan, in our home offices and our actual offices, we have boards and files and disk drives filled with information on the properties that we want to own the most. And we've watched it come alive over the last 5 years as little by little. Guess who called today, Steve? We got a call from Pete. We're buying it. Guess who called today? You know, we watch these things come alive. And I mean it with my 100% pure whole heart. everything in your real estate game will change when you really start to focus on the life you want to create and the properties that will get you there. So, you know, before you started recording the call, I believe we talked about chasing opportunity or working your strategy. And so many people, myself included, I chase opportunity when it comes in front of me at times. But if my real goal is to continue taking my son to school forevermore and own my freedom and have leverage, I have to chisel out and carve the lifestyle that I want to live and the properties that are going to get me there and go after them very personally, intimately, and with some craftiness. This is chess. This is not checkers. You know, we really have to be focused, serious, and, you know, it is very serious. We're talking, you know, wealth, not being rich anymore. We're talking about building and accumulating wealth. Everybody on this call knows how to make money in real estate. You know how to make, you know, wholesale deals and make $100,000 a year. But to jump to that next level, to really accumulate wealth, really requires you to work a strategy rather than chase opportunity every day. So focus on the properties you want. Don't just blanket mail a neighborhood and say, I want to buy a rental this month. Go out there and put your name on a property that you want, print out a photo of it, the public record of it, the zoning of it, the GIS mapping, who are the neighbors, how long have they owned it, what does the owner do, where do they work, where do they play, where can they be seen, what strikes their fancy, how can you get a letter in that guy's hands that makes that guy respond and say, man, I like your vision for continuing to pay me an income on this property that I no longer have to deal with anymore because I'm about ready to start enjoying my golden years and watch it come alive. We should do a whole nother call just on that topic because that's where my passion really comes out.
I was going to say that the focus I get it. It is absolutely the key and I love it. And I will be in touch with you here real soon to try and get that online. And also we'll see what the listeners respond to as far as in the comments and what they'd like to hear. Personally, I'm all in and we'll be back to you on that to do a,
awesome.
A podcast on that. But Eric, before I let you go, what's the best way for somebody to get in touch with you if they'd like to reach out to you?
You know, I can be found on, you know, I'm on all social media and Facebook and Twitter. You can either find me at The Eric Stark or The Real Eric Stark, and it's Eric with a K. My blog site is therealericstark.com, and you can find out more information about me at breakthroughgroupinnercircle.com.
All right. Eric, thanks again for taking the time, and we'll be in touch.
My pleasure, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, what did you think of that? If you are an investor and you get excited about all the possibilities real estate investing has to offer, I think you'll agree Eric brings it. If you liked it and you'd like to hear more, more from Eric, do me a favor and leave a comment and let us know what you'd like to hear him talk about. Eric is well-versed in private money, marketing, and much, much more. And he's very willing to share his knowledge with us. So be sure to leave a comment and we'll get him back on the show real soon. And don't forget to subscribe. You can subscribe on iTunes. Go type in Commercial Real Estate Pro Network in the search bar there. And when you do that, you'll be able to catch all of our guests on Commercial Real Estate Pro Network. Occasionally, we have a show that we'll slip in the middle of the week as opposed to our weekly regular shows. We know you're busy, so we thank you so much for making time for us today. We do appreciate you. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.